De ander wil hem bij helpen. Degene die helpt is strafbaar. Euthanasie is daar ook een voorbeeld van. Een dubbel huwelijk aangaan. Beide partijen willen trouwen met elkaar. Een van de partijen is al getrouwd met een ander. Kan de ander niet schelen. Ze gaan een dubbel huwelijk aan. Willen ze samen, toch strafbaar. Een wat vreemder voorbeeld is het bevrijden van een gevangene. Ook daar zijn beide partijen het eens. Maar helaas voor degene die de gevangene helpt om de vrijheid weer op te snuiven, diegene is strafbaar. Weer een ander voorbeeld, commercieel draagmoederschap. Ook daar zijn partijen het eens. De een wil een baby produceren, ik zeg er wat diplomatiek. De ander wil die graag ontvangen. En beide zijn, als het commercieel gebeurt, dat moet ik erbij zeggen, strafbaar. En hetzelfde geldt voor seks tussen arts en patiënt, mag niet. En seks tussen leraar en leerling, mag ook niet. Ik geef u dus deze voorbeelden ter illustratie. Instemming alleen is dus onvoldoende om strafrecht buiten de deur te houden. En daar moet ik ook iets aan toevoegen, want denk nou eens goed na over, dat doen wij, als wij zo'n zaak of als wij zaken moeten beoordelen, wat is nou eigenlijk toestemming? Waarin is eigenlijk ingestemd? Laat ik zeggen, als een onervaren partner die nog nooit aan SM heeft gedaan, door zijn veel ervarene partner zoetjes aan steeds verder een grens wordt overgebracht. Kan je dan altijd zeggen dat die persoon werkelijk heeft ingestemd? Wist hij wel waar die ja tegen zei? Is het niet mogelijk dat hij achteraf denkt, goh, als ik had geweten dat het deze kant op zou gaan, dan had ik nooit ja gezegd. En dat ja was er wel aanvankelijk. Daar kunnen juristen nog wel eens lang over peinzen, dames en heren, over dit soort vraagstukken. En verder wil ik nog een ander belangrijk punt in het kader van toestemming naar voren brengen. En dat is het argument van de goede zeden. Dat is ook een juridisch begrip. Je moet dat niet in zedelijkheid trekken of moraliteit. Het is een vrij neutraal juridisch begrip. Laat ik het ook weer met een voorbeeld toelichten. Stel, ik vraag u mijn vinger af te hakken. U heeft daar toestemming voor. U doet dat. Vindt u dan dat u niet strafbaar bent? Vindt u het dan redelijk dat u zegt, ja, maar ze wou het zelf? Ik wil u maar aangeven, ergens is er een grens aan waar je als redelijk mens op ingaat. Je hebt ook je eigen verantwoordelijkheid. Er zijn toestemmingen denkbaar die gewoon waardeloos zijn in juridisch opzicht. Omdat het te extreem is, te... Ja, laat ik zeggen, het zelfbeschikkingsrecht over ons lichaam is niet onbeperkt. Er zijn dus situaties denkbaar waarbij, hoewel er toestemming is, die andere persoon die op die toestemming is ingegaan, toch rekening moet houden met een situatie waar het recht tegen hem gaat werken, waar hij zich dus niet op die toestemming zomaar kan beroepen. Nou, als je deze situatie nou toespitst op uw SM-activiteiten en u vraagt mij hoe moet ik dat dan zien binnen ons SM-gedrag, dan is mijn inschatting, maar ik zeg u erbij, veel jurisprudentie is er niet, veel uitspraken van rechters zijn er niet, dan is mijn inschatting dat als u ernstig letsel toebrengt aan elkaar of een hele ernstige gevaarssituatie laat ontstaan, dat die toestemming op zichzelf u niet veel verder zult helpen. En ik heb me nog nooit heel precies verdiept in wat er allemaal mogelijk is binnen een SM-kader. Maar ik heb wel eens horen verluiden dat er toch situaties zijn waarbij een van de partners neigt of grenst aan bijna doodgaan. U moet het dadelijk maar tegenspreken als het anders is. Maar daar kunt u begrijpen dat toestemming toch werkelijk niet zoveel zal helpen. De volgende argument, de privé situatie. U zegt SM is privé. Yeah.
Nederland en zij zal de forumleden aan u voorstellen. Tanja.
Dankjewel, Jacques. Ik heb geluid of heb ik geen geluid? Heb ik zo geluid? Ja. Dankjewel. Goedemiddag, dames en heren. I'm supposed to do this in English, but I will switch to English right now. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. We're very glad you're staying to listen to this forum discussion. I would like to introduce to the audience the people on the panel. On my far right, far left for the viewers at home, we have Hein Verkerk, who is the press assistant of a Euro Member of Parliament, Nel van Dijk, also spokesperson about European affairs for GroenLinks. And Hein Verkerk is also a member of the COC Werkgroep International Policy and has many years of experience with the International Gay Liberation Movement. And he confided in me that in heart and soul, he still feels like a gay activist after all of those years. Next to that is Angela Kaptein. We have all heard a lot of what she has to say about the Dutch situation, which is very clear to me personally. Many of my questions have already been answered. Angela is, apart from a public prosecutor for the Public Ministry of the Netherlands, also a policymaker for that same ministry. On my right here is, of course, Kellen Farshi, founding member of Kantaal and Spanner, and also, to my personal opinion, a very important diplomat in the international SM community. To my right, we have Betty Pearl, longtime sex radical, who has been a spokeswoman for the Dutch SM community since the early 80s. She was one of the very first people who spoke out about her SM lifestyle on Dutch TV, and one of my important examples. And more recently, Betty makes a weekly program on talk radio about sexuality. Next to Betty is Hélène Dorizon, founding member of Comité Spanner France, if I can say that in my bad French-English accent. Also a freelance journalist, as well as a longtime lover of liberty and a diehard masochist. She is also a member of Maudite Femelle, which is a women's SM group in France. Next to Hélène, we see Frank Stevens, who is a representative of Amnesty International Netherlands, who specializes in international policy on gay rights. Frank has confided in me personally that today he will be here wearing two hats, the official Amnesty International hat, and of course, a personal hat. And I'm sure you and the audience will know immediately which hat he's wearing at what time. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen on the panel, for being here today. I must press you that we don't have a lot of time today. Although we would all love to sit here and talk for many, many hours, I will have to ask you, please, to keep your responses short and efficient. And if you run over more than, let's say, 3 minutes, I will have to call time on you.
Yeah, you should have been repeat problems.
Before I start, I would like to take this wonderful opportunity, now that I'm sitting here with a microphone, to talk very briefly and sketch a picture that I see at this moment in time for the SM community as we sit here today. I think we are here now almost 2 months after the judgment of the European Court of Human Rights in the Spanner case. And I think the SM movement at this time, it has arrived at a place where the gay liberation movement was during the early 70s. SM has become more and more public over the last 5 years in Western European countries than it has ever been before. But in spite of this visibility that we see so clearly depicted on TV and film and in advertisement, we see that the main way in which SM is depicted is still a perverse sexual aberration. SM has a commercial value. It is entertainment. It is a sensational thrill. However, the SM that we see commercially depicted is not a reflection of SM play as it really is to those who truly love it. SM is also still on the World Health Organization's list as a mental disorder. SM people also have no legal protection. In some countries, SM involving pain is illegal. We have heard that from Callum. In most countries, there's no specific laws on the books about SM. And in some countries, we find there is a no prosecution policy, like we have in the Netherlands at this moment in time. If I may very briefly and roughly sketch what was just said by Mevrouw Kaptein. No country that I know of legally protects SM practitioners. And as it has been shown clearly in the European Court of Human Rights, the prosecution of SM practitioners is not even a violation of human rights. Just like gay activists in the early 70s, we will have to speak out, starting here today on this panel. I would like to address three topics with the people on the panel. First of all, I would like to talk a little bit about the public opinion on SM and how it has changed in the last number of years. Secondly, I would like to talk about some legal aspects of SM. We've heard many interesting points on the Dutch legal situation from Mevrouw Kaptein, and there are many more questions that we have. And thirdly, I would like to talk with the people who are here as SM activists in various countries, and also with people, with other people, about the possible strategies that we can take as SM activists to make our case better and to show the world that SM is actually a viable sexual choice. So first of all, the public opinion. The public opinion on SM has definitely changed over the last couple of years in Western European countries. Now my question that I would like to ask to some of you is, what has changed in public opinion in your country, in your home country, over the last 5 years? Has SM indeed become more visible? And secondly, if it has become more visible, does this also mean it has become more accepted as a sexual choice? And I would like to ask that question, first of all, for the Dutch audience, Aan Betty. Do you think that in the Netherlands over the last... I should have said this first, shouldn't I? Over the last couple of years, do you think the public opinion in the Netherlands has changed about SM?
Yes, it has. Of course, much changed. Often people don't become afraid when you tell the people that you are doing S&M. But what you say, it is very commercialized, S&M. And that is a negative side. It is often put in the sensational context.
Mm-hmm. And do you feel that SM has become more acceptable to the public opinion as a real sexual choice?
I think, ik doe het liefst in Nederlands, een klein beetje, ja.
Okay, yeah. Betty says she thinks she wants to talk in Dutch. That's which funny. Will be a little bit difficult, but I will have to translate. Yeah. She thinks that in the Netherlands things have changed a little bit.
Yes, maar het nadeel is dus dat het ontzettend vercommercialiseerd is, de SM. Het is ook in de sensationele sfeer wordt het vaak getrokken, waardoor mensen toch vaak niet een goed beeld krijgen. Het is vaak alleen maar de glitter en de buitenkant. En ik zou haast zeggen, een heleboel van de SM-mensen hier zitten, tussen haakjes, hartverwarmend, dat er zoveel mensen zijn van, nou ja, dat we iedereen die eigenlijk al heel lang heeft meegedraaid, dat die hier is. Maar iedereen klaagt erover. Mm-hmm. Dat de televisie wel een hele oppervlakkige, mm-hmm. sensationele benadering van SM geeft. Dus of we veel gewonnen hebben, weet ik niet.
Oké. I'm trying to keep in mind everything she said. Betty said that basically she gets an impression that some things have changed, but that it's very obvious that it's primarily the outside, the glitter, the aspects of sensationality that are depicted in on Dutch television. And she also gives a compliment to many of the old-time SM'ers present in the audience for them being here, which is very heartwarming to her personally, and says that many of the people that she has talked to have complained about especially this aspect of commerciality and superficiality, and that maybe it is so that we have not won so much.
En ik, misschien nog één ding. Ik vind het fantastisch, zoals we hier bij elkaar zijn. Dat hoorde ik van een van de mensen die hier zitten. Dat we ze eindelijk ook over SM praten op een niet-consumptieve manier. Mm-hmm. Hè. We zijn gewend altijd SM te consumeren met feesten en zo. Mm-hmm. Maar dat we weer... Dat we weer eens bij elkaar zijn om ja, over andere aspecten van onze seksualiteit te spreken. Dat vind ik vreselijk belangrijk. And especially what you said, that you are more, you feel you more contact with hetero S&M people than with gay vanilla people. That is also very important. I believe that the old difference between people, between gay and straight, there are coming new frontiers between people who defend a more open way of treating sexuality and others.
Thank you, Betty. Do we need a translation on this, Helen?
I understand more or less.
Okay, Helen. Great. Thank you, Betty. I would like to address also the same question to Helen. What do you think the situation has been over the last couple of years in France?
Well, it's complicated for early as the 18th century in France, there is sex book, including whipping, mm-hmm. and that sort of things. So there is a tradition of libertinage in which it is used. Sad, we gave the word saddest. And in the work of Sade, he plays the victim and he plays the hangman. When we arrive to Mazor, to Sa Chère Mazor, we go to a completely different world. And this is a world where I recognize myself, of course. It's a world of contract, because Mazor was a masochist. And of course, he wrote fantasy about his life, but he had experiment okay. most of it. So the situation in France, there is some sort of tolerance about the fact that people can have kinky sex without being prosecuted. It's a long thing. You had an Oscar Wilde trial in England at the end of the 19th century. You never had a trial in France against homosexuals. The first laws that were written against homosexuals in France were written during Maréchal Pétain, during the occupation. For one good reason is that the laws were written by Cambacérès, the ministry of Bonaparte, who was a raving queen himself. So he didn't vote anything against homosexuals. Now, I haven't heard of prosecuting people for being SMers. Mm-hmm. What I've heard around me is particularly one case I can quote. It's a woman of 40, living with her husband, getting bored by the way her husband was taking care of her. And it's something that arrived quite open. And you see them arrive in the hetero SM scene. It's the woman of 40 looking for the charming prince dominator. Mm-hmm. And she found one. And the husband asked for a divorce. And they obtained the custody of the children, saying in court that his wife was now being in sadomasochist action.
Right.
No, that's as if she was going to do it in front of her children.
Right.
You know, it's something quite incredible.
So
it was not a shame. You know, people say, oh yes, that's it.
Mm-hmm. Helen, do you feel that in the public opinion anything has changed in the last five years?
It's difficult to say what is the public opinion. In my newspaper, for instance, I had no problem to vote about the SM march in yes, I had a problem. I had to go through two different departments. Mm-hmm. I went first to a department, it was a girl and said, oh, but with what is happening in Belgium? Uh-huh. I became wild. I said, please. And then I came to another, I said, okay, you can go. And when the judgment was published in Strasbourg, it was not me who wrote the thing. The guy in Strasbourg wrote a little article saying, now it's police in the bedroom.
Right.
And I have the idea, I think French people, they like their sexuality, they don't want people to interfere with it.
Right. And do you feel that, you don't feel there is a lot of change over the last 5 years? It's basically the same as
it's
always been.
It's complicated, because now French society is in a very, all sort of things are going on. It's obviously, there's a backlash of censorship, there's a backlash of backward ideas. For instance, recently in Strasbourg, in the Cathedral of Strasbourg, the Archbishop made comment against gay. Mm. So there are ACT UP activists and homosexual activists that made a scandal inside the cathedral. They were prosecuted by the court, and the judge, who was a woman judge, say that Catholicism is the general religion in France. Which religion, France is supposed to be a laic country. There is no state religion in France. So it was admitted. So there is some sort of backlash, so we have to be vigilant.
Okay, thank you.
I mean,
then
the public opinion.
I have to call on time.
Yes, just that. I think the general intelligent public opinion have understand that sadomasochism is between adult and consenting adult.
So basically they perceive it as something much more private than in other countries, you think?
Yes, but still the judge, you have this stupid judge Petiti, this 80-year-old judge who made vote all sort of things after the Strasbourg case, and he say if we let that go, it's the door open to torture and pedophilia and I don't know what.
Yes.
Even
Judge Petiti,
so they are still stupid people.
Thank you. Judge Petiti was one of the judges of the European Court of Human Rights, who wrote a separate opinion next to the judgment, and he said he thought that the European Court of Human Rights had not yet even made a statement clear enough. He also wanted to make it illegal for people to do something which would be humiliating to other people, even if it did not cause any pain or did not leave any harm. So basically he wanted to make it illegal for somebody to lick your boots. Kellen, do you have anything to say about England? In addition? Do you think that the public opinion has changed in the last
five years? Do I have anything to say about England that I can say in front of my Frau Capan? England's in a funny situation because we have the commercialization of SM in the press and in the media, in the advertising. It has become an acceptable kind of image to use in advertising as a joke, mind you. Or, you know, the glamorous sort of fetish club, rubber club side has become very popular. There are lots of fetish bars and fetish clubs opening up. Anne Summers, which is like married people's sex shop, you know, have pictures of models with collars and rubber on, you know, and obviously the kind of mainstream media, the serious press, have a more tolerant attitude. But when you look at the attitude beneath that surface, I think that people they are still. At the very best, they are sort of shocked in a sort of titillated way, like a he-he-he-he-he kind of way, you know. But a lot of people still are actually physically revolted by it. And particularly, I think it's this issue of, which Mevrouw Captain made reference to, of what is severe or serious harm, is mm-hmm. people find the idea that we might consent to things that are hurtful, right, or might be blood drawing, like a play piercing or a cutting or something, that appalls people. It's like there still is, I think, an attitude that sex is something that you do in bed with no clothes on in the dark, you know, and SM is not that, so therefore SM is a bit horrible, really, mm-hmm. You know.
So, to summarize this, we see that SM is more visible, still.
Maybe could I ask that it's very interesting what he said about commercial SM, because there is a commercial SM which is very popular, mm-hmm. which permits the people to say, oh, SM, it's fashionable. Mm-hmm. But personally, I don't recognize myself in this commercial SM because it's full of stereotype, mm-hmm. and most of the time, it put away the consent.
Thank you, that's very
like
clear.
Like if you say that everybody enjoy it, oh, it's not funny anymore.
Okay, thank you. So we do also see signals in society that show that many people do not think SM is actually a viable sexual choice. We see that, I would like to name some of those signals. When we asked people to be here today and speak in the panel discussion, we found that many people did not want to be here. Many lawyers that we asked were not willing to come and speak today on the forum because they were afraid of public exposure. One SM support group in the Netherlands, the 7th National SM Support Group, has decided not to take part in Spanner Group Netherlands because they considered political action a counterproductive strategy. People who are not here today, they cannot tell you what they think. And if I may be so bold, I would like to few political people, few political figures in the Netherlands politics and also in the European court are not willing to touch SM or even address it because they say they basically feel that SM is still too hot to handle. And even mainstream human rights organizations do not want to touch this particular case and did not want to touch this particular case in the past. Amnesty International is an example of such a group. And we here have Frank, who is going to, I hope, be able to clarify the official Amnesty International position on SM.
I'll try to. In fact, it's very, very easy. If you see that Amnesty International is an organization which has been fighting against people being imprisoned, people being tortured, mutilated, then it's kind of an anomaly, me being here, where people just are doing these things in private for pleasure. I mean, if you look at the official statement of Amnesty, mm-hmm. then Amnesty is fighting to free all prisoners of conscience. There are people detained anywhere because of their beliefs, ethnic origin, sex, color, or language who have not used or advocated violence. Mm-hmm. And it's just this violence, which is very important in the context of Amnesty, which was also in the court in Britain, mm-hmm. the hot issue, whether SM has anything to do with violence or not. And I see a parallel between the gay groups within Amnesty itself and the gay lobby with Amnesty itself and the SM mm-hmm. lobby itself. If you see SM as a kind of sexuality, either of the gay or the straight variety, then yes, then these people, these PENA people, are prisoners of conscience. Mm-hmm. If you see SM as something having to do with violence, then no. And that was the decision being taken by this committee in 1991.
So if I summarize that, could I say that the official position on SM by Amnesty International is that SM is not a sexuality, it is something involving violence?
Just let me read the official letter mm-hmm. about this.
Thank you.
I asked a person from the International Secretariat in London to comment on this, and she said that, or she writes that the Special Committee on the Mandate, the mandate is that what Amnesty is allowed to be doing. Everything in the street thinks Amnesty is doing everything about human rights, which is it not. Mm-hmm. It's a very limited mandate. Mm-hmm. And the SCM does not consider these cases, the Spanner case, as those of possible prisoners of conscience. Decision 30 of 91 requires that for consideration as adoption as prisoners of conscience, people are imprisoned solely on account of their homosexuality. In this case, there are factors other than homosexuality. It is clear that the prisoners engaged in acts resulting in physical injury. In addition, inherent in AI's concept of prisoner of conscience is the non-use or advocacy of violence. These cases clearly do not meet this criterion, even though it is recognized that the violence was apparently inflicted with the consent of the victims. I must say I'm not very happy with this decision. Why not? Because it's very, very strict. Mm-hmm. Of course, you cannot act as a worldwide movement if the mandate is diluted too much. Mm-hmm. SM doesn't have anything to do with homosexuality in mm-hmm. a strict sense.
Correct.
It doesn't have anything to do with violence in a strict sense. Mm-hmm. And yes, still, it has to do with sex. That is our opinion, but then we are the avant-garde here. Mm-hmm. And it is our task, I think, to make clear that SM is some kind of sexuality. Mm-hmm. And their Amnesty and the members of Amnesty, which is 1.1 million over the world, they are no different than the man and the woman in the street. They think just the same things as people who have no knowledge at all about homosexuality. So for them, this mm-hmm. is awkward mm-hmm. and this is despicable. Mm-hmm. And there is no difference between the thing you are trying to do here and the thing I should try to do within the context of Amnesty, making aware that people are aware of the fact that SM is a valuable kind of sexuality. Mm-hmm. But this is my private opinion.
That's your personal hat.
It is.
It's very clear that Amnesty International in this decision has basically adopted the judgment by the English judges. The English judges were the ones who said we are dealing with assault. The English judges were the ones that prosecuted the SM people in the Spanner case. And all along, I think the Spanner men have said, this is part of our private life, this is our private sexuality, this is not assault.
Absolutely. I think.
And isn't it the task of Amnesty International to make a question mark next to the judgment of a country, the judges of the country who say this is assault? Isn't that exactly the task of Amnesty International?
I would say there is something which may lead us to the decision of Amnesty to be reversed. And that is the fact that there is discrimination here in the fact that we are dealing with gay men who have been imprisoned because of SM sex, where straight people haven't been, or where the penalty or the judgment is much more lenient.
Yeah, but still in that case you would not...
And there we are allowed to act as Amnesty.
Correct.
Within the Amnesty.
Because Amnesty has adopted homosexuality as a
so we
part
can't
of their
say,
mandate.
See, the age of consent, it's 18 in Britain for homosexuality and 16 for gay sex. Amnesty is not, it's not within a mandate to act against that. If that is something the parliament or the government decides to adopt in the constitution, that's it. We are not going to go against it. Mm. But if there is something which is not applied within a country, within the constitution of a country, mm-hmm. to every citizen in an equal way, then we can make a case out of it.
Okay, thank you. Kellen, could you say something about the this is just coming up in my head as I'm talking to Frank, because in England there was a human rights organization, Liberty, the Liberty Alliance, is that the
Liberty.
Full name? Liberty, who decided to adopt the case while you were busy trying to get the men redeemed by the European Court of Human Rights. Could you say something about their decision and why they decided to indeed take it on?
Well, to begin with, of course, they didn't take it on. To begin with, they ignored it, and they ignored it all the way through the courts for the first 4 years. And they ignored it when the men first went to prison. What happened was that basically a group of SMers who were members of Liberty put a motion, through the annual general meeting and embarrassed Liberty over the issue and said that the argument must be that if a civil liberties organisation let people go to prison for consenting sex, that that is an embarrassment and an outrage. And what Liberty did was they acted as a go-between between the various legal teams that were representing the different men. And they also contacted major lawyers or barristers that we in Britain wouldn't even know how to get hold of, you know. And people like, you know, were right up there, you know, like Lord Leicester. And they also gave publicity to the situation. But I think it is fair to say that the SM community in Britain were and are still a little suspicious of Liberty because it did take them a really long time, and it was only because we demanded that they take notice, that they took notice. I think if we had not campaigned, they would still not be making a case about it.
Thank you. In all these explanations, we see that SM to the mainstream society has not.
I just want to make one very quick point, which is about the gay rights movement in my country, which is that the main gay organisation is the Stonewall Campaign, who actually did nothing at all for the whole of this case. And when the European Court judgment came in February, people rang up the Stonewall Campaign to ask them what their position was about the judgment, and they said, their press officer said, "This, we have nothing to say about this because it has nothing to do with us."
Thank you. Very clear. Another example of how mainstream society does not want to deal with SM because it is to them not an acceptable sexual choice, but a mental disorder, or even worse, a case of violence. At this moment in time, we have arrived at a very curious point. We have a European judgment that says, that gives an open mandate to all member states of the European Council to criminalize SM if they see need to. We have countries where SM involving pain is criminalized, and there are very few other laws on the books that give any protection to SM practitioners. Mevrouw Kaptein, I would like to ask you, do you think that in a legal sense SM practitioners could do an appeal to the various anti-discrimination laws that are present in some of the constitution of the member states, that as SM being a sexual orientation, would we be able to see SM as part of a sexual orientation, and therefore we deserve protection under the anti-discrimination laws?
Can't you give me a more easy question, please?
I thought it was an easy one. After all, it's Article 1 of the Constitution, okay. Isn't it?
Well, I never thought about it. I think it's hard. It's very hard. And I think it has to do with the choice you make. I mean, you're not born like a SM addict, or sorry for the word, but I don't find another one. You're not born like an SM practitioner person. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the main reason why it's hard to plead for a discrimination argument to get some protection.
Do you perceive SM more as a nice waste of time or a hobby than as a sexuality? Do you think in the public opinion SM is more seen as a hobby than as a sexuality?
Well, I think in public opinion, yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I learned now today that it has some therapeutic
value.
Yeah, value. I didn't know that. I think people don't know that. That's something. Mm-hmm. Sorry?
Helene would like to react.
Yes, this word of therapy. If you read any psychoanalyst that has written on the thing, it's become rather obvious that for certain person, SM is a big world. You know, each person is a different adventure. You cannot make rules about SM. The only rule you can make is the rule of everybody in any society. That means to respect the other. But Within things, I think certain people, SM is a way to get rid of trauma they had in their childhood. They repeat a scene that hurted them, and they repeat it through a seance. They take pleasure through repeating, and as they direct the seance, they get rid of the angst. Well, I say, me personally, it's ridiculous. You can't make a case out of me. You know, each person has got its own different story. Mm-hmm. When I was 7, I set the fire to the house of my parents. All the house was burned down. So I stayed all my life with a big guilt complex. And in a seance, getting severely beaten, please. I get out this trauma of me. So I consider also as a sort of therapy. But more
Thank
of
you,
that,
I will have
more
to
of that, I consider it as a way of loving. And this is a thing I don't like among SM talk. People very seldom speak of tenderness, speak of taking care of the other, and speak of love. And for me, that's all the thing which it is about.
Thank you, Hélène. That was a very useful addition, because I think we all will agree on that one.
It's the right to love. It's not only the right to have sex. It's the right to love.
Thank you. I think Callan wanted to say something about this.
Yeah, there is one thing I wanted to say, which is that actually, for me, I think if we're going to talk about being born like something, then I would say that, yes, I am born like this. Yes. I can't have sexual enjoyment unless I am hurting somebody. SM is as crucial to my sexuality as the fact that I am sexually attracted to men. They are different parts of what makes me who I am, but they are equal and important. And the idea of spending the rest of my life living with one man in some great relationship, which was vanilla sex, would be totally mind-deadeningly frustrating. It would kill me. It would send me mad. And that's why, for me, I refer to SM as a different sexual choice, because it's something that is it's so much like... When I was a child, I realized that I remember fantasizing about doing things that would now be seen as SM, right, to people long before I realized that it was always with boys. The SM bit came first, and it was because of the society I live in that I came out as SM afterwards. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the thing, is that has to be taken on board. Mm-hmm. Sorry about
that. I understand, and I understood from your words earlier that you are born like a, how do you call it?
A sadist.
Okay, thank you. But, well, I think you have a long way to go to explain, and that's what you know, all of you. I mean, like homosexuals in former days, they were seen like sick people. So maybe in future you will make your point, but... I think it's not in this century.
Well, that's okay. We don't mind waiting 3 years. Okay, Hein would like to say something
about
this.
I will say more later about all those international treaties, but one of the outcomes of long discussions in especially the gay movement on what formulation you are going to use to have a non-discrimination clause in any international law came out to the word sexual orientation and not to what in Dutch is called seksuele geaardheid, sexual nature, which would refer to being born like that. I'm a gay man and I don't know if I'm born gay. I know I'm gay. I don't know if I was, I know I'm not ill, I know I'm not a sinner, but I have an orientation, and I think with the word orientation you can come along far. Also, I would include SM, as far as I understand it, in sexual orientation. I would even go further, and I have had very difficult debates on that, I would even include pedophilia under sexual orientation. But after long discussions in the gay movement, we agreed to have the word sexual orientation. I don't recall that we have had long discussions with the SM community on that, but I don't even recall that they opposed it or something like that, so we work with that. And when everything is okay in the Treaty of Amsterdam to be finalized on the 16th of June here on the European Summit, there will be a non-discrimination clause including sexual orientation. And I think that when we are going to talk about strategies later, you should take that in mind, that that would include it. Though, of course, it's something completely different as what we have been talking in the gay movement. Also, there we talked about SM and other kinky sex, but never as if that was a special orientation or so. No, I think we should include it in this debate.
Thank you, Hein. I think that's very clear, and it's also very interesting to point out the difference between sexual nature and sexual orientation. I'd like to come back to some of the legal aspects of SM. Angela Kaptein has raised many questions for us about consent. She's talked about the implication of how consent is used in Dutch law. She's also talked and asked us some questions about consent and the limitations of consent. It is obvious that the word consent